Welcome to the Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
Welcome to the 41st episode of the Golf Podcast. This week it's just me. Mike is actually away, but we do have a special guest we're going to be bringing on the show in a moment. I'll mention a little bit more about that in a second. Last week, we discussed a handful of ways you can help be better prepared for the course. We ran through a couple of different things that you can do, very easy preparation stuff that you can kind of use to just make sure you're ready for anything that the course might throw at you and not be thrown off your game because of something silly like a weather event or something like that. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to that, you can go back, go to golficity.com/episode40. This week, we'll have all the show notes at golficity.com/episode41. And as I mentioned, we have Dan Abrahams on the show. Dan is the author of Golf Tough. This is a book that I personally got a lot out of. That's why I wanted to make sure we got a chance to get Dan on the show. We've talked extensively in past episodes about the importance of really working on your mental game. And a lot of this book goes in depth about that, and there's so much actionable content in here. The interview that we had with Dan itself just was excellent. So much great information. So stay tuned for that. Also, Dan is across the pond over in London, so there is a couple of connection errors that we had in there. But as I said, we do our best to stay with it because it's well worth it. There's a lot of gems of information that we got through. But to give a little bit more of a background, Dan is the lead psychologist for England Golf. He's also a former professional touring golfer and a PGA coach. So Dan is working with golfers of all skill levels, and he's working on all aspects of their game. And it's just a wealth of knowledge that's both in the book and just coming from the interview with Dan. So without taking any more time, because we've got a nice long interview for you here, let's jump right into it. Now, as I said, just kind of stick with it. There's a couple areas where you may hear the audio cut out, just unfortunate connection issues, but we'll do our best to get through that. And it, as I said, it's well worth it. So kind of bear with those little bit of audio issues, and let's bring Dan on the show now. So hi, Dan. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for inviting me, Frank.
So, Dan, tell us a little bit more about yourself, you know, as a sports psychologist, a little bit more of your background, and specifically about your motivation behind the book Golf Tough.
Sure. Well, I'm now a sports psychologist, but my background is I was actually a professional golfer. I actually failed miserably as a professional golfer to make any money over here in Europe. I'm based in London, England. I played the mini tours around Europe. Never quite got onto the main tour. And one of the reasons, the main reasons why I failed miserably was because what was going on between my ears. I didn't know how to build my confidence. I didn't know how to deal with distractions, manage my focus around the golf course, manage myself under pressure, if you like. And that sort of took me on a journey. I stopped playing pretty quickly, and started to coach the game, and coached sort of thousands of golfers for several years, from beginners through to professionals, from very young players through to adults. And along that journey, I fell more in love with the psychological side of the game. So I went back and did all of my qualifications and became a full-time sports psychologist 5 to 10 years ago. Now I work as a sports psychologist, and I work as the lead psychologist for England Golf. So I work with all our international players, tour players, but also with mid-handicap amateurs. Ever since I read sort of the very famous book, Bob Rotella's book, back in the mid-90s, my ambition has always been to write a golf book about golf psychology, and that sort of brings us up to date. I back in March, I released Golf Tough, which was my first golf psychology book, And for me, it was my take on golf psychology. It was about demystifying golf psychology for a golfer of any standard, from the professional. I wanted a professional to be able to read it, but also a high handicapper, and also a young golfer to be able to read it. My passion isn't just to demystify golf psychology. It's also, you know, to bring it alive, and I wanted the golfer to be able to read the book and say, hey, I really want to go out and hit some balls. I really want to go out and try these tools and techniques. So that's really where I was coming from with Golf Time.
So then talking about kind of what's between your ears, what does it mean to you, if you could sum it up, what does it mean to be golf tough?
Mm-hmm. I think to me, what I try to get across in the book is to be able to deal with distraction. So, I mean, I the book up to four different sections: practice, preparation, performance, and progress. And each section, I'd like to think, takes a slightly different approach to the psychology of game. So in the practice section, you know, so many handicap amateurs, I'm talking about scratch handicaps, right the way through to 28 handicaps, 36 handicaps, go to, you know, they go and practice, and they go to the driving range, and they beat balls. And in that first section, I talk about effective ways of practicing. So practicing to improve, practicing to build skill, if you like, which I think is a very psychological process. I get very frustrated at seeing golfers who, you know, they're willing to go into a pro shop and spend £400 or dollars, $500, $600 on a set of golf clubs or a driver, your brand spanking new driver. But when they go out into the range and they just beat balls and they don't do it consistently and they don't do it effectively, and then they wonder why their scores aren't coming down. So in this first section, I talk about, you know, to me, golf tough is about practicing effectively. And what I'm not saying is that you have to work harder at the game. I'm just saying you have to work more effectively. You have to focus better. You have to learn how to develop your skills.
And that I'm glad you bring that up. Actually, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm glad you bring that up, because we see that so much too, where people are they'll willing to acknowledge and they'll say those old true things of saying, you know, the most important distances in golf is the 6 inches between your ears, or they'll say, you know, the game is 90% mental. But we see those same people turning around and chasing the newest equipment and spending the money and just kind of throwing money at the wall, so to speak. But as you said, they'll go down to the range and just kind of hit bucket after bucket without that purpose. So what I really like is what you talk about in that initial section is that purposeful golf, and especially the skill building activity. So a lot of that is based around, too, the idea, and correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of that is based around the idea of at least mentally simulating situations out on the course. Because I find that a lot of people who I see not doing that and not having those effective practice sessions develop a lot of frustration as well, because they're saying, why am I playing so well on the range and so terribly when I get out on the course? And I don't think they're making that connection there. Do you agree with me?
100%. And you know, the metaphor I would use is like a pictorial metaphor. You know, imagine a plank of wood in front of you. I don't know, about 10 feet long, 2 feet across. If I hoisted that a couple of feet in the air and I said to you, Frank, would you walk across that piece of wood? Well, you'd say, well, yes, no sweat, I'd go and do that. But if I hoisted that wood, that plank of wood, 1,000 feet in the air, it's the same task in so many respects, but with a different risk level. And that's the relationship between practicing on the practice ground or the driving range, and then trying to take your game onto the golf course under pressure in competition, whether it's our monthly medals or whatever it might be. Suddenly our brain is under stress, it's under pressure, and our thoughts change. We have a lot of automatic negative thoughts. We have this stress response with our body. And coming back to this notion of practice, I think we can have a range of tools and techniques on the golf to help us play under pressure. But I like my clients, and what I try to say, what I think golf tough is practice more effectively to prepare to play under pressure. So as you alluded to there, I have something that I call skills tests. And these are actually, we use this quite predominantly with our international players in at England Golf. And that is, we have mini skills tests that puts players under pressure. So for example, if I'm working with a player, I just don't want it to be balls. I'll take 10 balls as an example, and we'll create a fairway. That fairway might be, say, let's start with 30 yards wide. And the test is, you've got to hit 10 consecutive shots onto this fairway. Once that player achieves that, so there's a bit of pressure on the player, now we're going to narrow it down to 20 yards. Then we're going to narrow that fairway down to 15, so then to 10 yards, so on and so forth. So you're gently putting more and more pressure on the player. So what you're doing, what a player is doing in that circumstance, is not only are they honing their skill, their driver skill, their ability to hit fairway, they're doing it with some pressure on themselves. And when they achieve that, they can walk away from the practice with a small injection of confidence. Hey, I hit 10 consecutive shots on a 15-yard wide fairway. Fantastic. That's brilliant. Rather than, I'm just going to beat this. And you get no feedback at all, really. So I think pressure protocols on the practice ground is so important. It's something that golfers don't do well enough. And it's something I really hone in on Golf Tough in this first section.
And I think also is so important about that is the effectiveness that you can get in a practice session. It can be abbreviated if it's more effective, in so much as a lot of times I hear people saying, well, everyone says you got to play this game a lot to get good at it. And they say, well, I'm not a professional. You know, I'm playing on the weekends. I don't have enough time to really get good at it. And I think one of the misconceptions there is that, sure, you don't have enough time if you're going to go down and spend an hour or two on the range, and it's essentially wasted time in a certain respect because it's not simulating what you're doing out on the course. So what you're saying here, and what I think that a lot of amateurs can really take a lot away from, is the idea of saying, if you can be more effective with your practice sessions, they don't need to be as lengthy, and you'll be able to see more improvement quicker, correct?
Absolutely. Quality over quantity. You know, a golfer is far better spending an hour of quality practice time than 2 hours of wasted. Just the beat balls, the grind in the dirt doesn't necessarily work. And what I'm saying is, every golfer who goes down to the driving, you know, a golfer who wants to improve, is passionate about improving, should have a target, should put him or herself under pressure. So constrict the landing area, if you like, as an example of putting yourself under pressure. And should use their routine on every single shot, just as they would do out on the golf course when they're playing a medal or a knockout competition. I think those are imperative practice protocols that will help you improve quicker than if you just stand there, give me the driver, I'm going to whack some balls away. Because at no stage with that, in that way, are you mirroring what you do in a competition. You must mirror what you do in a competition. It's not about working harder, it's about working better.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's what I like about the different skills tests that you talk about in the book, is that they're highly actionable. You can go out, you can do those on the range. But shifting gears a little bit, another thing that you talk about in depth and the real importance, you really stress the importance of keeping your statistics. And you mentioned a little bit about Chris Sell's method. You even go so far as to say, if you decide against keeping statistics, yet you still want to improve and play golf tough, you'll have a problem. You know, you mentioned that the fact that keeping statistics for you is golf rule number one. And we've talked a little bit about this on the show, and our listeners may, you know, remember back a couple episodes, we were saying the importance of it. We were just kind of dabbling in it a little bit. But I want you to elaborate on that, because I can definitely see it, and what you, the way you explain it in the book is far better than I can explain it here. But talking about, if you're not keeping statistics, again, talking about not being able to practice effectively, you may not necessarily know where to put your time because you're not sure, you're not identifying the areas of your game that need the most work if you're not keeping that statistic. So can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yeah, look, I like golfers. I can't see how a golfer who is passionate about improving can guarantee improvement if they don't know. And knowing is the big word here. Letters, red ink underline. If you don't know what areas to improve, you just go off a hunch. It's not good enough. Now, let me give you a couple of psychological phenomena that lead to thinking biases about our game. There's something I talk about in the book called the recency effect. If I was to rifle off a string of digits, say 10 digits, what we know, and I was to say to you, Frank, can you tell me those digits back? What we know in psychology is it's likely you'd be able to feed back to me the digits that are in the latter part of the digits I've said to you. So what I'm trying to say there is we're very, very good at remembering what happens towards the end of our round, you know, you know, the putts we've missed, the shots we've hit poorly towards the end of our round. You know, we might putt well at the beginning of our round, putt badly at the end of the round. Our brain tends to stick like glue to the ones that we've missed at the end of the round. So we say to ourselves, well, we putted badly. Now, that's a phenomenon called the recency effect. Also, we tend to be subject to emotional biases. Okay, so we build so much emotion around, say, missing lots of putts, but actually, it might not be our putting that's a problem. It's the fact that we're hitting greens, but we're hitting greens to 30, 40, 50 feet.
Yep.
So actually, it's our approach that's the problem. It feels like we're taking a lot of putts, but actually, we're not hitting our shots close enough.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're passionate about improving, and please don't get me wrong, I think you can take any section of the book and you can improve your ability to play golf tough. But, you know, golfers love golf and golfers want to improve. And what I'm saying in the book, especially this first chapter, is just take a little time to keep your statistics. Build your knowledge of your game. And when you've got that knowledge of your game in hand, you can then start to analyze and think about your game objectively rather than subjectively. And when you've got that objective evidence in front of you, you can say to yourself, right, I'm missing these greens, and I'm missing these greens from this distance, or, you know, my long irons aren't good. Or
all right, sorry, we lost Dan there for a second, but we have him back. Now, Dan, we're talking about the importance of keeping your golf statistics, and one thing that I wanted to just also mention to that effect is that it may seem, at least on the surface, a little bit cumbersome, especially for a beginner golfer. But one thing that I really like here, and you mentioned a couple of great methods in your book for, you know, different resources for keeping statistics, but it's almost as though there's no excuse not to at this point, because we've got access to things now that only the pros had in the past. And what I mean by that is we even have things like iPhone apps that can help us keep our statistics. There's just so many ways to do it. It's making it so easy for us. Do you find that that makes it a little bit easier for your students?
100%. You know, as you say, there's so many resources now that help you log your data, your statistics. And look, I mean, you mentioned the word cumbersome. Absolutely, it takes some dedication and some commitment to take the time as you compete, as you play, to keep your statistics. To look over them in the evening. But we're talking about golf, and we're talking about golfers, and golfers love to read books about game, and they spend time watching it and thinking about it, and let's bring some structure to that. That's kind of what I'm saying. No matter your level, no matter your age, no matter your gender, no matter your ability, I think statistics offers you a fast-forwarding opportunity to improve your skills, to improve your game. The analogy I use in terms of trying to progress in golf without using statistics is it's a little bit like playing darts when blindfolded. You're going to hit the dartboard, but
you're not going to hit the bullies or whatever, the high scores, if you like, on a consistent basis. And that's what I say. You know, we talk about, books detail how handicaps haven't improved. The average handicap hasn't improved in America, in the UK, across global golf, despite technology, despite, space age clubs and materials going into golf courses that are going further and better penetration and trajectory and all that. Yet these handicaps aren't improving. And that's largely because we're not taking an intelligent enough approach towards our game improvement, in my opinion. And I think the bedrock to that is just keep taking a little time to keep your statistics, and in that way, you get to know more about your game. It's fun doing so, analyzing your game. It's fun using some of the online platforms to help you do that, and you will certainly speed your improvement in that way.
And I couldn't agree with you more, especially when you say speed the improvement, because as you had mentioned earlier, where you had given the example about you think maybe on the surface that it's putting that's your issue, but in reality, you're not sticking the approach shots closer enough to the pin. I think once you start tracking your statistics, there's a lot of, especially right in the beginning of starting fresh doing that, there's a lot of quick improvement that can happen as you kind of cherry pick, the areas that you may not have known that you had an issue with, and then just kind of knock off those and, apply that very, concentrated practice, as you mentioned earlier, to those areas. I think that a lot of golfers will find that they can do some really quick improvements because it's areas that they never really spent time on before because they never identified it. So I like that as well. I think that's one great area. It's just one thing that I really think is a great spot for people to improve upon it. I think I cut you off there. Do you have something else you wanted to add?
Yeah, no. I was just going to say what it also does, and what I emphasize in the book is it can start some great coaching conversation with yourself and your coach. Should you be seeing a PGA professional? I would hear with the British PGA, or have done in the past, coaching coaches. And it's as somebody who's been a professional golfer and a professional golf coach, I think that the culture of coaching has to change as well, in terms of it's not good enough anymore that somebody comes along to a coach, is paying them X amount of dollars to help them improve, and all that player gets is, let's go to the practice tee and let's hit some shots. Well, hang on a minute. How does that coach know whether it should be your 6-iron and your 7-iron that you should be hitting, or hitting some shots with your driver? I think it's a great opportunity to take your statistics along to you, Peter. In this room, my statistics, so can we work on that? Or to put it in front of your coach, well, what do you think about this, coach? What I can work? What are the weak areas of my game? And I think it starts some great coaching conversations. And improves the relationship between yourself and your local professional.
And it's a way for you to get the most for your money, because if you're paying for a session and you can go in there with those statistics and they can know more about your game, and without having to see your game for more sessions, it's a great way to jump right in and do that. I also wanted to cover another area, and this is one of those things we could really discuss this all night, because the book itself is so packed with content. But just in my reading it, I had a couple areas that really really highlighted a couple of things that we talk about, like I say, a lot on the podcast, and things that I think the audience can really benefit from. And another one, you have a section where you talk a lot about self-talk, and we've talked about this before, and most importantly about wrangling negative thinking. But what I liked most about it is we hear all the time people say, positive thinking good, negative thinking bad, that's just the way it is. But what I liked is that your focus isn't really on that. You're talking more about, instead of thinking so much that negative thinking is bad, you're more saying, let's just focus on effective thinking rather than constantly saying, just try to get rid of negative thinking. Am I correct there?
Absolutely. I mean, what I hone in on in the book, one, certainly in the last section, in the progress section, I've had to revolving around the benefits of negative thinking going into a competition. One of the questions I ask my clients all the time is, what do you do if it goes wrong? Which could be construed as a pretty negative thing to ask, but I want a golfer to be able to strategize in their mind what they're going to do when it goes wrong. The reality is you are going to hit. You are going to miss in a helpful way. What are you going to think if you slice it, if you hook it into the trees? How are you going to deal with it? And that's a very important question I ask. And I think it's a question that somebody can ask themselves in the car on the way to the medal or the night before, because then you start to open up a catalogue of inner pictures, if you like, related to how you can best react and respond. So when I talk about the benefits of negative thinking, it is very much about going into a tournament, a competitive round. And just be, you know, negative thinking can help you strategize what you're going to do if and when it goes wrong. Out on the golf course, you know, you're still very right. I try to avoid this term positive because I just think it's something that tends to get overblown. I have an acronym that I use, and that's ANTS, A-N-T-S. Automatic negative thoughts, A, automatic, N, negative, T, thoughts. And I talked to clients about squashing ants. And the deal I set up with the players I work with is I talked to them about how important, not necessarily positive thinking, but speed of thinking, that golf isn't a pedestrian game. It's actually a game of speed, not just swinging through the ball at speed, but also speed of thought. You've got to be able to squash ants really, really quickly so before you sort of the negative thoughts set in too much. You start to get down on yourself, and get worried and anxious, and that sort of way of thinking multiplies. I want players to be able to squash ants quickly and shift back to effective ways of thinking. That effective way may be different for different people. You know, getting angry on a golf course or being frustrated sometimes works for some people. It's about discovering how you think when you're at your best and striving to repeat that time and again. And I do think that's slightly different to the notion of just think positive, just think positive. It's, you know, there's a whole kaleidoscope in terms of how different people think on the golf course and what works for them. I think my job as a psychologist is to help people unlock how they think and what they do when they're at their best and help them to repeat that time and again under pressure.
And I really like the analogy and the idea of the, you know, kind of with a little bit of speed of going through those negative thoughts and squashing them, as you said, because it is important to kind of clear that and get through that before you start having those compounding issues that so many amateur golfers really struggle with, where they'll say, I just blew up on that hole. I had a triple bogey there, and they're thinking about that still 2, 3, 4 holes afterwards, and they're watching their game slide away, and it's just like a snowball effect. So, you know, I think that's a great idea. I think that's something we can definitely take away as far as an easy tip of just saying, as soon as you step up on the next tee after one of those holes, start squashing ants, so to speak, right off the bat and move on with your round.
Absolutely. And you know, let's take a step back there. I mean, if you miss a, let's just say you miss a 2 or 3 foot putt, you tap in. I actually believe that, you know, when I talk about speed, once, you know, your hand goes into the cup, you pick out the ball, now you've missed that 2 or 3 foot putt, what does your brain want to do? Your brain has a negativity bias. It loves to attach itself to bookmark problems. And so your brain, as you're walking off the green, wants to be firing thoughts out related to, I just missed this part. that was so frustrating, so annoying. I've dropped the shot there when I should have made a par. Now, what I'm saying to my clients, what I'm saying in the book is no, stop. You know, I teach us a protocol that I say, we squash the ant, we spot, stop, shift. You know, and that shifting has to happen as soon as your hand goes in that cup. That ball comes out, you're shifting your body language straight up, you're walking onto the next tee with great body language, you're starting to focus on your routine for your next shot. So what I'm saying is you're managing your mindset at all times out there. You know, so for bad shots, for poor plays, for times when that ball bounces badly for you, where your brain wants to throw out an act, where your brain wants to dwell on the negative, dwell on the bad stuff, you've got to get, you know, your gear shifted back to great body language, great self-talk. And what is the deal here? The deal is that you've got to go play that next shot. You know that. That's the game. You've got to go and play it. So you've got to shift back to a very, very effective and helpful way of thinking for you. So speed is of the essence.
I really like that. I think I'm gonna take that whole idea of saying don't bookmark negative thoughts. I really like the way you put that there, because that's so true. It's what so many of us do. But anyway, Dan, I just wanted to take a second. Thank you for coming on the show. I know you and I could talk about this all night. There's so much here to talk about. I mean, I'm tempted to even get into the whole thing on the body language, because it's so true. Sending the messages that the body sends the mind and vice versa. But like I said, we would end up with an hour long show here. So for all of our listeners who want to find out a little bit more about you and about the book, what's the best place to do that? I know you have a website. I'm going to put a link to that in the show notes. But what's the best way to get in touch with you and to find out a little bit more about the book Golf Tough?
Yeah, look, there's separate ways here. I'm very, very active on Twitter. My golf account is at Abraham's Golf. So follow me on there. I'm always throwing out tweets, little motivational tweets related to what I've written about in the book and general golf tweets, golf psychology tweets. You can catch me through my website, danabrahams.com. And there's a couple of free chapters that you can read on my publisher's website, which is benionkearney.co.uk. There's the introduction chapter, and there's also chapter 2, which is about the difference between skill and technique. So there's a couple of chapters you can catch there, and the book is available on Amazon.com.
That's excellent. Well, again, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing this with us. I know there's so much here to digest and we could take away. And it's just one of those things, as you said, just getting out there, shifting the mindset, practicing effectively. I really like what you said about, and you work even the tweets into the book, the different just kind of nuggets of information there. And what I really like about that is it's just retraining the brain. It's almost like that muscle memory of just creating, even for your mind, of just those little reminders that help you remember new ways to think, and just changing that mindset. Because as you said, the brain wants to go to so much negativity. By having these little tidbits, it's a real big help. So I just want to thank you again for everything, for all the great information, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for inviting me. It's been great fun.
All right. Take care. Okay, so I want to thank Dan again for coming on the show. As I mentioned earlier, I'm going to include in the show notes all the links that we talked about to Dan's website, his Twitter account, the book itself. We'll have all the links on there so that it's just easy and you can access them a little bit easier. To get to that, go to golfacy.com/episode-41. We'll have the links there. As I said, you know, I apologize for the couple of little bit of a connection issues we had there. Unfortunately, you know, just recording with the internet over, you know, across the ocean for some reason, sometimes we run into some connectivity issues. But I wanted to leave everything in there because there was so much great content. That's why we're not cutting any of it out. You'll hear where it just kind of dropped off. But again, I wanted to make sure we left everything in there because there's so much great information. So I encourage you to check out the book. Reach out to Dan through Twitter. He's very accessible. You know, as a very knowledgeable guy, I'm sure he'd be happy to answer questions if you tweet him his way or contact him through his website. So we'll have all that information there. Again, thank you all for listening. If you like what you hear, take a second, leave us a quick review on iTunes. We appreciate that. And we're going to be back again real soon with more golf tips.